This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. Rick Snyder, the governor of Michigan, released a plan for the embattled city of Flint on Monday to deal with a devastating crisis of lead contamination in the city's water pipes. Snyder's plan includes refitting water faucets and providing additional medical support for children in the mostly African-American city of 100,000 people, a few miles northwest of Detroit. Snyder, who has faced a growing chorus of demands for resignation, spoke alongside EPA head Gina McCarthy at a congressional hearing last week. Snyder was lambasted by several House Democrats during some tense moments. Here is a confrontation that House Representative Matt Cartwright had with Snyder.
Do you admit here today that more cases of Legionnaire's disease were reported since the switch to Flint River than, quote, all the cases in the last 5 years or more combined? Do you admit that?
Yes, and that's why I provided a table that shows a number of these cases were at healthcare facilities. In terms of the numbers, there were 87 cases in the 2 year period.
You admit here today that even after the whole world knew that Flint residents were exposed to unimaginable levels of lead, you did not declare a state of emergency until January 2016. Isn't that true?
I took immediate action. As soon as I learned there was a lead issue, we started issuing filters to people, doing water testing, doing blood testing.
Governor
and to be open
Snyder,
with you, I wish more would have been done.
Plausible deniability only works when it's plausible. And I'm not buying that you didn't know about any of this until October 2015. You were not in a medically induced coma for a year. And I've had about enough of your false contrition and your phony apologies. Susan Hedman from the EPA bears not one-tenth of the responsibility of the state of Michigan and your administration, and she resigned. And there you are, dripping with guilt, withdrawing your paycheck, hiring lawyers at the expense of the people, and doing your dead-level best to spread accountability to others and not being accountable. It's not appropriate. Pretty soon, we will have men who strike their wives saying, I'm sorry, dear, but there were failures at all levels. People who put dollars over the fundamental safety of the people do not belong in government. And you need to resign too, Governor Snyder.
That was House Representative Matt Cartwright confronting Governor Rick Snyder of Michigan. But it's not just the governor of Michigan who is responsible. The Environmental Protection Agency also bears serious responsibility. And joining us now to discuss that is Marsha Coleman Adebayo. She is a whistleblower who worked at the EPA for 18 years. She's the author of No Fear, A Whistleblower's Triumph Over Corruption and Retaliation at the EPA. Her lawsuit led to the No Fear Act. And she recently co-wrote the piece, Water Crises Like Flint's Will Continue Until the EPA is Held Accountable. She wrote it in The Guardian. She was at last week's congressional hearing on Flint. I'm very pleased to welcome to Rising Up, Marsha Coleman Adebayo.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So let's talk about the responsibility of the Environmental Protection Agency. EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy, as I mentioned, also testified alongside Snyder. The EPA, where you worked for many years, is supposed to be a government agency that protects the public from such pollution disasters. It is supposed to enforce the Clean Water Act. In your opinion, is the EPA almost as culpable for doing nothing about Flint as Michigan authorities?
Oh, I think it's more culpable than Michigan authorities in many ways, because a part of the separation of powers between state and federal is that the federal government is the agencies of last resort when the states fail to do their job. And so under that kind of umbrella arrangement, when a state decides to renege, if a state decides to retaliate, if a state decides that it's going to, let's be like, extreme, cause injury. Well, actually, that isn't so extreme because that's what happened. But if a state decides to cause injury, it is the federal government that steps in and says you may not poison your population under the Safe Drinking Water Act, under the, Clean Water Act, under the Clean Air Act. You don't have the authority to poison your population. That's the fallback position for most Americans. We saw it so dramatically, I think, in the 1960s, 1962, 63, when you have these really recalcitrant governors like George Wallace and these kind of, you know, white supremacist racist, you know, governors in the South that said, you know, we are not going to integrate our public schools. And at one point, as you know, there were situations where governors actually stood in the doorway of public schools and said, we will not allow black children to enter the school. Well, the federal government didn't step back and say, well, the states have the authority because, you know, these students fall under the purview of the states. They said, no, federal law trumps state laws. And even though you may have laws in the book that, you know, that provide for segregated schools, the federal government says that integration, that all students have a right to go to public schools, and you must stand down. And if you don't stand down, we will have you arrested, and then we will send in federal troops, and they will escort the children into the schoolhouse. That's the way it was supposed to work in Flint. That was the way it was supposed to work in Flint. When Governor Snyder decided that he was not going to protect the citizens of Flint, at that point, the only recourse was for the federal government to step in and say, under federal law, under Safe Drinking Water, under Clean Water Act, you do not have the right to poison your citizens. And if you don't step in, we will have you arrested, and then we will send in FEMA to provide clean water and facilities for those citizens. It didn't work that way. So, you know, it's hard to say who's equally to blame, but in my sense, and I think if you talk to most EPA employees, they will say to you that the EPA ultimately had the responsibility under the Safe Drinking Water Act, which has criminal penalties, to tell the governor to step down.
Now,
and to provide water to those citizens.
What about the fact that the EPA Region 5 Director Susan Hedman resigned on February 1st? Was that not right. Sort of high enough authority to resign? I mean, that at least expressed that the EPA bore some responsibility and took at least some steps to admit that it screwed up.
Not at all. You see, Susan Hedman was resigned in order, if you play chess, so she resigns as a pawn in order to save the queen, right?
I see.
So she's then careening under the bus in order to save her higher-ups. And quite frankly, you know, there are a lot of problems in Region 5 that Gina McCarthy knew about, and we know that she knew about them with Susan Hedman because there was a congressional hearing just 4 months before Flint blew up, in which there were about 10 young interns who were the victims of sexual predators at EPA in the Chicago office. That's what we call Region 5, you know, Chicago, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana. So that's the sort of the federal region. And so there were a number of sexual predators operating out of her region. And these young girls, I think there were about 10 of them, became victims of these sexual predators. Well, what did Susan Hedman do when she found out that she had managers who were sexual predators? Well, first of all, you know, she did nothing. And then when it was brought to her attention that she was going to be forced to do something, she literally moved the sexual predator three cubicles away from the victims he had created from his illegal act. So one of the things that was brought up, so then Congress called Gina McCarthy, who is head of the EPA, to account on the fact that it's not safe for women to work in Region 5. And what does Gina McCarthy say? Well, you know, I think we did the best we could do. We moved the predator a little bit away from the girls. And on top of it, we sent his name to our Office of Human Resources. That's what they did to young girls who were victims of sexual predators. And so there are a lot of problems between these women, between Gina McCarthy and Susan Hedman. And then, of course, the chairman of the House Committee on Government Reform said, do you or do you not believe that sexual attacks against women are a criminal. And she said, well, yeah, sort of. He said, why didn't you call the police? And now he's talking to the head of the EPA. If you knew that...
Wait, so this came up during the hearing over Flint?
And so this also came up during the hearing on Flint because it showed that Gina McCarthy knew that there were prior problems with the with Hedman as head of Region 5. That, in other words, Flint was not the first time that there were major problems under her administration. And by the way, what did Gina McCarthy call Susan Hedman's resignation after she poisoned tens of thousands of people? She called it courageous. She called it courageous. Now, what I call courageous are the people in Flint, Michigan, who are trying to raise children with lead poisoning, not the woman who turned her back on those children.
So I want to play us an audio clip of Gina McCarthy also being grilled by members of the House in the congressional hearing last week where she spoke alongside Rick Snyder.
Congress is specific on this about states' rights and not stepping on them. Yeah. I want you to go back and start looking at your edit in regards to waters of the U.S. Now let's keep going. Is that a serious response, really, in regards to your response with Ms. Hedman? Is that seriously a response for somebody who understands that the complexity and seriousness of lead poisoning? That's an appropriate response?
She did nothing to discredit.
That's my point. She did nothing. The point is, you know better. She knows better. Well, this is not my first rodeo with you. Over and over again, we've gone it. I mean, remember Southwest Colorado? And an ineptitude that you actually had there, too, there's a responsibility. I look at the gentleman next to you who's taking responsibility. I'm looking at somebody else. I want to see responsibility, too. And the American people demand it. I mean, all I've seen it, I've seen the chairman over and over again. You still don't get it. Member after member, you still don't get it. You have bred a culture at EPA that is built of fraud, denial, incompetence, and bureaucratic nepotism. That's what you've done.
Representative Paul Gosar, a Republican member of the House, confronting EPA head Gina McCarthy at a congressional hearing last week. My guest is Marsha Coleman Adebayo. She worked at the EPA for 18 years and was a whistleblower. Marsha, what do you think, and I want to get to what responsibility Snyder also bears, but what do you think needs to happen? What should the EPA do right now? Are you saying that Gina McCarthy herself, the head of the EPA, should resign?
Absolutely. And not only Gina McCarthy, but anyone in the EPA who bears any responsibility for the poisoning of this community. I mean, just think for one moment. Two examples. What would have happened if we had been able to link this poisoning of an American city to ISIS? Just think about it for one moment. I mean, we would have been dropping bombs. We would have had drones. We would have killed thousands of people at this point. For poisoning an American city. But do you realize that not one person has even been charged with a crime? I sat next to a young boy who was about, 8 years old, 10 years old during the hearing, and it felt to me almost like he had Parkinson-like tremors going on. And I asked him at one point, I said, do you know why you're at this hearing? He looked at me and he said, because I have lead poisoning and I might die. Not one person has been charged with a crime. Now, if you're a landlord, and every landlord in this country knows, and you are supposed to provide a lead-free environment in the apartment that you rent out, and if a child becomes impacted or exposed to lead in your apartment, you will be criminally charged and you will go to jail for poisoning that child. We have administrators in this country that have poisoned a whole city, and we have not seen one person charged with the crime.
So can you tell us what the atmosphere was at the hearing last week, in addition to members from both parties, House members from both parties grilling both Snyder and Gina McCarthy? There were residents of Flint, advocates for Flint residents like yourself present. What was the atmosphere like? How did Flint residents and their supporters express themselves?
Well, I'm in the supporter group because I live in Washington, D.C., but I helped organize people in our area to go to the Flint hearing. And I, for example, tell our folks to get there by 8 because the hearing started at 9. And by the time we got there, there were already 1,000 people in line. And so they had to open up, I think, 3 or 4, sort of tele offices on the Hill, so we could sit there. And so I was one of those people who had to sit in an exterior room, which turned out to be a blessing in disguise, because if we sat inside the hearing room, if we had, you know, had any kind of vocal reaction, we would have been arrested. But since we were in auxiliary rooms, we could yell and scream and call people liars and all this sort of thing. So it was actually a wonderful way to really experience the Flint residents in a room, and the majority of people in the room that I was there were Flint. And of course, I mean, they're terrified. They've got lead in their bodies. During the press conference after the hearing, a woman got up and she said that her husband now had had a stroke because of the lead in his left eye, had become blind in his left eye. He's also experiencing, I think, kidney or liver failure because of the lead in his body. So even though we always talk about children and the elderly being the most impacted by lead contamination, lead poisoning, it doesn't mean that adults don't face major, major health risks because of now the lead in their bodies. And I just wanted to also make the point that the little boy I sit next to, who's about 8 or 10 years old, you know, his great-great-grandchildren may have lead in their system because of his exposure. So lead is an intergenerational exposure. His grandmother said at the press conference that this little boy was on his way to college. I mean, he had a bright, hopeful future. He wanted to be a doctor, or he wanted to go to college and do great things in his life. He was making straight A's, so he was on track to do that. And since the exposure, he is now making straight F's. And he's been reported to the principal's office over 30 times because he can no longer attend. He can no longer attend.
And we know that lead poisoning impacts your sort of neural pathways, and so leads to behavioral problems and issues that we don't often think about as linked to lead exposure, but often is.
So let's fast forward this little boy. He's now 10. So now he's 15 years old. He can't learn. He can't sit still in school. What will happen to him? You know, he becomes a part, I would suggest, I would predict, and boys like him, a part of the, you know, mass incarceration network, right? I mean, we can predict that. He won't be successful in school. He won't be able to attend. He won't be able to read and write like most people his age. So what are the options left for him? And the only thing I pray is that when he's at court or when they're thinking about putting him in jail for some crime that he committed, that someone will say at that hearing, this was a little boy who was poisoned in Flint, Michigan, 5 years ago. And would the court please have mercy on him? I mean, that's what I pray. Because we're looking at this vector of children now who are not going to be successful in school and who have diminished futures now, academic futures. I mean, this is a tragedy of untold proportion, and not a single person has even been charged with a misdemeanor.
Marsha, there's news now that public schools in Newark have had lead contamination in their water supply at the schools for years. So again, this is a potential crisis in the making. At some point, shouldn't EPA administrators also be held accountable for this, you know, for what's happening here or for what could be happening here? I mean, you could point out and say the media is covering this. Why isn't the EPA doing anything about this?
Well, of course. I mean, I think that there are criminal provisions, by the way, under the Safe Drinking Water Act. There are criminal provisions under the Clean Water Act. But it does take political will to charge public officials. And we know that there are two very separate systems of justice in this country. If you're a landlord and a child becomes exposed to lead while you're renting the apartment to a family, you go to jail. If you're head of the EPA and you look the other way when a whole city has been contaminated and exposed to lead, you go on to your next bright future job, right? Those are the two separate and completely separate, unequal form systems of justice that we have in this country. So Susan Hedman, for example, I thought when she came in that if she really understood the criminal penalties for what she did, she would have taken the Fifth Amendment during her testimony. But she had no fear that anything was going to happen to her. So she sat there and she, you know, pontificated about this and that. And when she walked out, she probably had a martini and went back to Chicago. And, you know, she's thinking about maybe a cruise next week or whatever her next vacation plans will be. But let a landlord do what she did, and they would be in jail now. So we have two completely separate systems of justice. If you work on behalf of the state, you're never held accountable. If you're just an everyday citizen, then you go to jail. Those are our two separate systems of justice in this country. And it's going to be the American people. I wrote an article for The Guardian, and I just said, and I said in this article, the primary goal was one of the things that sort of saddened me during the hearing was that I saw these people looking to all these members of Congress and, you know, admiring the marble and all the statues and all the stuff we have in the Capitol. And so they're looking towards these people outside of themselves for answers and outside of themselves for solution. But the real issue, but the real power is within themselves. It's their ability to organize. It's their ability to hold these people accountable. It's their ability to demand their human and civil rights. That's where the power is, not on Capitol Hill. And we keep learning this lesson over and over and over again. But unless the people in Flint rise up and force the people in Washington, D.C. to take them seriously, we will go on to the next issue and they will be forgotten.
Marsha, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and drawing out issues that aren't being raised by either Congress or our mainstream media. We'll post a link to your Guardian article at risingupwithsonali.com later today. Thank you so much for all the work you do.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Marsha Coleman Adebayo is my guest. She is a whistleblower who worked at the Environmental Protection Agency for 18 years. She's the author of No Fear, A Whistleblower's Triumph Over Corruption and Retaliation at the EPA. And she just wrote a piece in The Guardian called Water Crises Like Flint's Will Continue Until the EPA is Held Accountable. We'll post a link to our website, risingupwithsonali.com. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Back in just a moment.